Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, it's the last of October, and it's also Halloween, so if that's an important day for you, then I guess happy Halloween. Neil Stavem here at Ted Ross there. So, your kids are sort of growing out of that.
Yeah, they're getting a teenage stage. A 13-year-old that's kind of on the fence might scar up some candy tonight.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And just be the hunter-gatherer and collect for the winter so that we can all survive the dark and cold. But I was thinking, in light of our conversation coming up today, that, you know, this is a day for children to dress up in costumes. And, of course, what child doesn't like to dress up? Mm-hmm. But it can be just one more painful reminder of loss for those parents who have experienced the death of a child, whether born or unborn. And today on Connecting Faith, we'll talk empty arms with our friend Cherokee Isles. She's back with us. And interesting, this morning at our staff devotions, one of our team shared a bit about her journey in a particularly difficult season of loss in her life and how the words of Psalm 56:8 encouraged her. Here's Psalm 56:8. It says, "You keep track of all my sorrows. You've collected all my tears in your bottle. You've recorded each one in your book." And it just serves as a reminder for each of us to be tear catchers for others and look for ways to come alongside those who are hurting. And we'll talk about that today on Connecting Faith. I think it'll be a great program.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that. But first, a word from John Stonestreet about some needed legislation. Let's hear this.
Well, so much for a grateful nation. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stonestreet with The Point. John the Baptist told soldiers to be content with their wages, but he didn't tell them to give their wages back. Yet that's exactly what happened to thousands of members of the California National Guard who years ago received reenlistment bonuses. Many of these soldiers deployed after agreeing to stay in. They risked their lives, and now outrageously, the Guard is forcing them to repay their bonuses. It turns out that some officers, under pressure to meet reenlistment quotas, offered bonuses to soldiers who weren't eligible. These officers pled guilty to fraud, but the soldiers, many now retired with no idea they weren't eligible, are struggling to repay thousands of dollars that they use for education or mortgages. Although the Secretary of Defense has temporarily halted repayments, it will take an act of Congress to fix the situation. Said California Congressman Kevin McCarthy, "Military heroes should not shoulder the burden of military recruiters' faults. Please contact your members of Congress. Tell them this isn't okay." I'm John Stonestreet.
Pretty recognizable song, and today, in addition to being Halloween, maybe more notable, is Reformation Day.
The 499th anniversary today, so a big one next year.
Big one next year, and a lot of anticipation about that. Great conversation this morning, Dr. Bill Meyer live, talking about some of the impact and the changes of the Reformation. And so you want to check that out, you can go to Dr. Bill Meyer live show page on myfaithradio.com. By the way, when you're there, I want to encourage you to sign up for the Charles Stanley Life Principles Bible. We're giving away one each week here during this coming month.
Yeah, it's the KNJV version, right?
Yeah, New King James.
Right, and it's a wonderful leather-bound, beautiful book that has a lot of great resources in there, large print as well, so easy to read.
He's actually autographed these, so it's kind of nice. Charles Stanley Life Principles Bible, so it's an opportunity for you to get some practical articles, notes, and sidebars to help you understand what the Scripture says about life's most important questions. We're giving that away this month, so check that out at myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. All right, 8 past the hour, let's jump in with today's conversation. And I do want to encourage you, you know, if this is an area that is very near and dear to you, and I no doubt that you know someone who has experienced a loss like this, you're welcome to join us with your story. We'd be honored to have you just share a bit about your loss experience. And if you have some questions about that, Cherokee Isles would be happy to field those questions too. Cherokee Isles, bereaved mother who became a pioneer in the area of infant loss. She's an international expert, a consultant, an author, most importantly, a parent's advocate for those who have lost an infant. And she's an author of some 18 books now and booklets on baby loss and death and dying. She's spoken to thousands of meetings, support groups, conferences, and seminars. He's appeared as a guest on many local and national television and radio shows. She has written several books, including Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and Infant Death. It has over 300,000 copies in print and recently been revised. And the website where you can find out more information at babiesremember.com. We'll be referencing that and several others as well in today's broadcast. But Cherokee, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Oh, thank you, Neil. It's always a pleasure.
So October, Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. I know that this is a busy month for you. Give us a sense of where we are in terms of understanding this loss that's still way too frequent.
Well, yeah, thank you. Good question. I'm so grateful that you like to do programs on this in October, and so it's launching us for the rest of the year when people can learn and reach out and be aware of how to support families who have a baby die, because it is a 12-month, 24/7 kind of situation for people when they have a loved one die that's not necessarily always affirmed by the community. People don't know what to say and how to help. And so therefore, 28 years ago, we got President Reagan with a lot of other people all over the country and other organizations to declare October as Pregnancy Infant Loss Awareness Month. And since that time, when it was hardly ever spoken about, there was no television shows about it, no movies, little in the newspapers. Churches weren't even talking much about it, from what I understand and experienced. We've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. I keep people up on Facebook and in terms of just different things that are going on, and so I've been writing a series of three installments, and my last one will be today, of the progress that we've made. And I'm excited to say that there are more programs on radio and television. In fact, I was on a program that I'd love to tell you about later, where I helped a couple who were going to have a baby that they continued the pregnancy, the baby was going to die. And so NPR did a piece in August, and it's been very exciting to see how the positive fallout of that. We have a movie from a few years ago called Return to Zero, specifically on stillbirth. We have a lot of walks and memorial services and days of remembrance throughout the month. On October 15th, there was a wave of light throughout the world where people lit candles at 7 p.m. for an hour and just spread the light. And I saw a beautiful picture of the Lowry Bridge lit up on October 15th with pink and blue right there in Hennepin County in Minnesota. I'm traveling and speaking at all kinds of hospitals, as are others, and walks, and then really helping people one-on-one. We're getting more calls. We're getting more referrals. People understand that folks just shouldn't be doing this alone. So, but the one thing that I'm really most excited about right now is I've long been upset about miscarriage and how poorly families were treated in the ER. And I was called to a meeting in Houston in April, and since that time, a position statement for the ED, which in other words is like a new philosophy standard of care, has been approved by the National Perinatal Alliance, and a number of other big organizations are getting ready to sign on to it. And we were able to craft something that says all staff need to be trained, determine the meaning of the loss. If it's a baby, then to say the word baby rather than those horrible words like products of conception. If it's a baby to you, that's, or fetus, that's not very affirming and helpful. And so I'm really excited and making myself available to do some teaching in the ER around the country now, as is another organization, trying to help them understand that when someone comes in and their baby is being miscarried and they're in pain, that they have physical needs and they have emotional and spiritual needs. So this is the first long-awaited big move I've seen in the field of loss within the ED. We need to help our staff be more sensitive. Families deserve better care and options. Do they want a DNC or do they want to birth that baby, a D&E, or be induced so that they can actually see the baby and, you know, create memories and make them real and feel like they have the right to name them and get mementos. And so I'd say that a lot has happened, but we have, as I said a few seconds ago, we have a lot to do still. Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, I mean, hospitals are sort of the first, I guess, in many ways, kind of first responders. They're not really first line defense, but those interactions there are probably pretty important for parents, or maybe whether, you know, soon to be first time or, this is a repeat situation. But it's our hospitals changing the way they just, is it just a matter of changing language or is there more involved?
Well, there's more involved, but it starts with language because the language affirms whether it's a baby or not to these families. So I was just in Sioux Falls speaking in an all-day conference, and I asked them what words they use, and even with a stillbirth, and they did admit that, well, not to the parents' face, but in the hallway and to each other, they used the word demise. And I said, I'd like you to think about the meaning of that. Is that, I get that it's a shortcut. It's a quicker way than saying the baby who died, and they don't want to, they're trying to protect the people around them, but I, you know, the other mothers. And I said, but really, why protect them? That keeps the silence, that keeps the conspiracy of silence going. And are you really demeaning the importance of that life by using words like demise, even amongst each other? And are you convinced that families never overhear you? Why not just say what it is? It's a baby. It's a loved baby who happens to have died and, you know, is missed, going to be missed, needs to be met. Let's not focus on the death part yet. Let's focus on the welcoming. And so they're getting pretty good in many places, although I see it waning. We used to be great. I used to meet a lot of people and hear from them who said, oh, I have no regrets or a few regrets. That's not the case quite so much anymore. There's too many hospitals that are losing staff that were well-trained, that are getting busy, that aren't doing one-on-one care. And so I'm trying to do another round of work out there with hospitals, encouraging them to remember that this is very important to every family. They get no do-over. And by the way, I should have started off by saying, for all those who've had a loss, my heart goes out to you, and I am so sad and so sorry that you have experienced the loss of a beloved baby. And we want our hospitals to give that kind of message and help them really collect a ton of mementos, memories, rituals that gives people some support over time. And so when it comes to the NICU or it comes to, labor and delivery and stillbirths and sometimes even later miscarriages, most hospitals do a pretty good job. Some do an excellent job. Few, though, do an excellent job, and I'm trying to encourage them to take it to higher levels and sharing some interesting and unique ideas like taking the baby out in the sunshine or the rain or the snow while they're at the hospital, or knowing that they have the right in just virtually every state to take their baby home. They may have to fill out paperwork. A few states require they have to work with a funeral director, but, you know, they can be with their baby longer than they think. They can dance with their child because they'll never get that wedding dance. And they could do that in the hospital room or at home, put on their iPad and music, and, you know, they can paint fingernails and bring in the children and just take videos. There's so many things that people can do, and hopefully hospitals are still stretching and not getting their staff so busy that they aren't giving the depth of time and wonderful memories and mementos, because my goal throughout these years, in addition to raising awareness so we have more of a sensitive, welcoming environment at home, at work, in the hospital, you know, in our communities, but that also we recognize that memories are the key to healing. We want to maximize memories and minimize those regrets. And now we're going to be working harder, even harder, in the ED departments to bring them up to speed also.
Cherokee Isles is an author, has written or co-written over 18 books and booklets on infant loss and bereavement as a result of her experience, and we'll have her share a bit about that in a moment. Her first and most popular book, Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and Infant Death, has over 300,000 copies in print and recently revised. And Cherokee's with us today. She has founded websites Babies Remembered and Wintergreen Press. You can find out more at babiesremembered.com. I want to invite you to join the conversation, too, if you have experienced loss of a baby. That's somewhere along the way, and just want to share your experience or maybe a family member and what was meaningful to you. Or if you have some questions about it, you're welcome to join the conversation. Our phone number is 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or you can submit your question online as well, your comment. If you go to myfaithradio.com, you can click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there, and submit your question at myfaithradio.com. More with Cherokee Isles coming up in a moment. Today, as we talk to Cherokee Isles, I was welcome the opportunity to have her join us. Cherokee's an author, and she's been a guest in multiple national radio and TV shows, international speaker, trainer on grief and loss, and she consults with hospitals and perinatal organizations across the U.S. She's founder of Babies Remembered and Wintergreen Press, and she knows from experience as a bereaved mother. And is also, gratefully, the mother of two living sons and is a grandchild, another one on the way. And so we're honored to have her back with us as we talk about infant loss. And maybe, Cherokee, just a bit about how, you know, I mean, every grief is unique to the person that's experiencing it, I guess. But are there some unique aspects of infant loss or, you know, stillbirth or miscarriage?
Well, you know, good question, Neil. And at, you know, at some point, I'd love to tell a little bit of my story and something that I found real interesting when I was at church this weekend that really kind of ties all of this in. But what I believe happens is that pregnancy is such an abstract event. Going to have a baby, until that baby is met, experienced, there's some shared stories. I think that it's hard for family and friends to understand the depth of love and the depth of loss and the need for support in the abstract. So I'm really encouraging families when there's a loss to come, even if they're 10 hours away, to be there, to be present, to experience the love and to experience the hurt and to understand how deep these feelings go. What a lot of folks may not recognize, and even themselves, they might say, well, I don't know why I'm so upset. It's just a miscarriage. I'm not very far along. But really, is there a love scale that measures length we've known someone or the size of their body or, you know, how long they've been physically in our lives? Or do we actually begin bonding and loving and preparing for children when we're little kids, playing house, playing dolls, playing mommy and daddy? You know, I know that I had a name picked out for a baby long before we were even wanting to have children. You know, first early years of marriage, I had Marama picked out. It means moon. It's Polynesian. I lived in Hawaii with my husband for a while. And so when I had a miscarriage, I had that name. I had played with dolls. I had been bonding. And even though it happened somewhere around 10 weeks and I just put it beside, you know, behind me and tried to get pregnant again, when I really thought about it later, I realized I missed that little one. I named that baby Marama. My husband and I agreed to disagree because he didn't think of her as a girl, and he wasn't quite there with me in the, yes, this is a real baby place at that moment in time. Later, I think it changed. But, you know, how do you make that abstract love, little life, be real to others unless they're involved, unless they get to see, you know, be a part of the opportunity and the experience. And then when we had our next pregnancy ended with, is that all right if I go?
Yes, yeah, please do, yeah.
Okay, when we had what I called a perfect pregnancy, though, had to get past that time of that first loss, and Brennan was stillborn, it was devastating and shock-filled. And again, no one in our family saw him, and so I know they cared and I know they hurt, but I don't believe they could be as supportive to us as they wished, because it wasn't quite real. We didn't know to invite them in to see him, to make memories, to collect mementos, to have little rituals, to have him baptized or blessed, or, you know, or a naming ceremony. And so that's when I wrote Empty Arms. We made so many mistakes and started on this mission of trying to help others get the support they need and come to understand, you know, why it is that that having a loss like this can be so devastating. We had two living children, two sons, as you mentioned, Kellen and Trevor, and blessed, feel very, very blessed, and parented differently. I know I did. That was gifts from the children who had come before them. And then an ectopic pregnancy and named that baby Brenna. And so this has been my mission and passion. Brennan would be 35 in 2 days. And when at church this weekend, the pastor talked about why God allowed my pain, and he quoted from Proverbs 20:30, sometimes it takes a painful situation to make us change our ways, and 2 Corinthians 7:9, I'm glad, not because it hurt you, but because the pain turned you to God. And I really feel that this experience that I had, my husband and I had, turned us to God, and that really I have been doing God's mission all these many 35 years, and I do not and should not take any credit for it, but give it to God, that we need kinder, gentler, understanding community here to recognize that if someone views this as a baby, we don't have that love meter. We need to recognize that love is love, and loss is loss, and let's support them to the fullest for always. They are parents of these children going forward for always, and though they may not ever have another living child, they're still parents. Though they may have three other children and two died, they're still the parents of five. So I would ask listeners to look to your heart and don't be afraid of hurting them. In fact, open up your mind and heart to address the other children and ask them questions like, do you think about, you know, in this case, Brennan or Marama or Brennan much? Do you, have they changed you, those babies who died? Is there anything you would love to talk about that others don't ask you to speak about? You know, really be reaching out to those who've had losses and allow them to speak their heart and share the stories. The narratives are very important.
We'll hear more stories. Sheri Kiao sharing her story a bit and her passion and mission, and I hope that you resonate with it as well. Cherokee is a bereaved mother who became a pioneer in the area of infant loss, and she's an international speaker, a consultant, author, most importantly, a parents advocate for those who've lost an infant. You can find out more at her website, babiesremembered.com. Babiesremembered.com. We'll talk about another website coming up here after the break. Also, love to have you join the conversation, too. Share your story. Or if you have a question, you can call us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484.
He sees every single tear. He feels everything you're feeling. He wants to hold you close and dry your eyes. Oh, your heart is what he hears. The world just hears you crying. No matter what the pain, he cares about every single tear.
The month of October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month. Baby Loss Awareness Month. We've been talking about it today with Cherokee Isles. Cherokee is an author, has written or co-written over 18 books and booklets on infant loss and bereavement as a result of her miscarriages and the full-term stillbirth of her son. Her first and most popular book, Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and Infant Death, is over 300,000 copies in print, recently been revised, and she speaks internationally, has been traveling a lot just this past month, working with hospitals and perinatal organizations across the U.S. to help us be more understanding. And we want to talk about that. By the way, our phone number is 877-93-FAITH if you want to join the conversation. Cherokee, talk a bit about how we start the healing process. And I know you have actually have expanded some of the resources you have so that people could actually get some encouragement, maybe more one-on-one.
Yes, thank you, Neil. And starting at the very, very beginning. So if your listeners know of anyone who is having a miscarriage or their baby has died or is going to die, we have a wonderful new paradigm, a new service. I train people with 26 hours of training, 30-plus books and booklets, in-person training and web training, mentoring, conversations to support them throughout as they help people. And we're being hooked up with people as soon as they get the news. So I would encourage people to call us or to go to our website and look all at the – there's 100 or so people so far who have signed up and been trained, willing to help people, be their guide, their advocate, their companion beside them, to teach them what they don't know before they make the mistakes. And that is at babylossfamilyadvisors.org. There's a list of people. Recently, as an example, I helped someone who was going to have an induction in 2 hours. And I was able to ask her to pause, to slow it down, to take some breaths, and to consider the idea of creating a little birth parenting plan before she was induced. And I asked if it was necessary to be induced. It was a little 16-weeker who had died, and she was at about 21 weeks. So didn't have to happen immediately. And she decided that what I had told her, which was, this is your only chance to parent your baby in the physical sense. After that, it will be, in memory only, and then when you meet again in heaven. And that meant a lot to her when I said, put aside your sadness and your grief and all the things that are getting in your way in a little basket in the closet. It's there to be waiting for you. But right now, could you potentially focus, because I don't want to tell someone what to do, are you willing to consider focusing on being the parent of your little 16-weeker? How will you meet him or her? How will the kids be involved? Can I help you with a birth plan? Can I ask you to think about your intentions? Do you want to be fully present and be the mama and have your hubby be the daddy? And she said, wow, that's just amazing. Okay, I'm going to call you back. And I asked her to read Empty Arms, pages 7 to 29, which is all about that decision-making. And so the healing really starts from the meeting and the welcoming and the being the parent. And they did it. They postponed that induction until about 6 hours later. They went and bought little gifts in the gift shop. She went from crazy feeling overnight, like a frantic crying, to this calm place. After she read that part of Empty Arms with her husband, we spoke on the phone, and we created a birth plan, and I visited her then later, and she told the staff what her birth plan was and how she was going to parent and be present and do everything, bathe and anoint the baby with oil and invite the kids in and dress and put that little diaper on themselves. And it went on and on. It was a beautiful experience. They put the baby in some saline solution because it was little and it puffed up and they could see how he looked. It was a little boy, Leo. And now they are wanting to shout from rooftops that we should not be rushing, that people need to speak with one of these baby loss advisors who then can give them support on an ongoing basis.
You mentioned in your experience that your husband sort of came along later, didn't understand what you were thinking. I'm sure there are many husbands today who are going, I don't know what to say, how to care for my wife during this time of loss. Is there one kind of step that you would recommend first?
Well, I would encourage dads to be a dad also. to experience their baby to the fullest, and that is a way of supporting their partner by sharing in the welcoming and the meeting and helping to plan when ready, no rush, but the goodbye, and to continue to keep the communication lines open, not to hide their sad feelings thinking that'll overwhelm her. In fact, most women I know, though it can flip, most women I know wish that their partner would speak about it more, would share their feelings so they could give and take with each other, you know, give support to each other and take support from each other, and not to think that the dad is the Coast Guard and going to save her and fix her. In fact, we can't be fixed, but we can be loved along the way and hugged and, you know, just keep talking, keep being together and not trying to be the protector all the time.
Cherokee, one of the things that I noticed on your website at babiesremember.com was about how soon does one go back to work, and then what do you say? And I hadn't really thought about that, but that, I'm sure that's a hard deal question as well, that we come back to work maybe a lot sooner than we anticipated taking maternity leave.
Yep, on both sides. How, when does dad go back to work too? And what does he say when they say, oh, what, you know, what's going on? Did you have the baby? And I would encourage dads to be open and to not specifically just act like it's about mom, to say yes, you know, when they ask how is she doing, to say, you know, physically she's doing okay, but emotionally, spiritually, we're both challenged. We're both having a tough time. This is hard on both of us, because from the very beginning then, that sets the stage. It isn't just about mom. It's a family event. And when mom thinks about going back to work, if she does, to recognize that it's going to be hard for the staff to know what to do. I encourage people to write a letter, send an email that everybody reads ahead of time. This is what we want. This is what happened. This is what we need from you. You know, yes, we would like you to say our baby's name, and this is her or his name. You know, we want you to ask about them. We will have a picture on our desk or near our workstation. And please know that if, even though the baby has died, and this is a picture of a baby who died, remember it's a picture of a loved baby. And you know, don't be afraid of that. So letting people know ahead of time, talking to the manager or having like a baby loss advisor can even call. I've done that. I've called family members and updated them and given them advice. We could do that with work also, do a little bit of teaching. Because going back to an environment of coolness where no one speaks about it can be hard. And I have to say, many people have quit their jobs for lack of good support and understanding when they go back.
Well, and as we talk about going back to work, but obviously, hopefully our church family is there for us as well. But are you seeing churches become better in their ability to gather around these families that are dealing with this kind of loss?
It depends, Neil. First of all, it depends if the leaders in the church model speaking about miscarriage and stillbirth and early infant, other infant deaths, because these are all infants, little, these are sons and daughters, no matter their size. If they model it and say it's okay to talk about it, then maybe they'll get the call and even learn about it. Sometimes I think our pastors and church leaders may not even know what happened. So first, we have to speak about it. And then second, modeling how we support and hold up these families with meals, with cards, with a conversation about, you know, tell me how you're feeling. Tell me about the birth. Tell me about your dreams and the loss of these beautiful dreams. How are the kids doing? So, you know, the church family is real important. And never fear that you're causing someone more pain by asking them about it. You know, use I statements. I've been thinking about you and wondering how you're doing, wondering how I can, our church family can help you. Do you want me to say the baby's name out loud? Is there something that you wish we would be able to offer you? How are you going to do it for the holidays? Is there, you know, some information that we can pass on to others? So the dialogue is real important, but it actually starts before the losses. It starts by how we model in our church community dealing with this as a real loss and in raising people up in prayer, you know, out loud.
Did, as you shared a bit about your story just a bit ago, did your grief affect your relationship with God and maybe ways that you look back now and say that wasn't really, I didn't have a clear understanding or it wasn't healthy?
Really good question. It often affects our relationship with God. My husband and I struggled with why would God do this to good people. You know, we read Rabbi Kushner's book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. My husband worked in child protection, and he saw lots of difficulties and tragedies and youngins that really didn't want to be pregnant or people who weren't making the wisest choices during their pregnancy. And then here we were doing it. We thought, well, and our baby died, you know, in the end, three losses. And so it was a struggle at first after Brennan died, trying to understand. But then, you know, much like what our sermon was about this past week, we recognized that God, you know, God's son died, and he would never hurt people on purpose. But what was it now for us to do with this loss and this pain? And I just felt strongly that God carried me as I wrote Empty Arms. I wrote about things that I had never even experienced. I wrote about the one-year anniversary, and the book was done before the one-year anniversary. And so I looked back and said, oh, God, you carried me, and now I guess I'm supposed to go and do this mission to help other people raise awareness and to teach our community how to do this better and to get the hospitals out of the dark ages where they really weren't seeing and holding, encouraging seeing and holding and picture taking. And so I feel very blessed by the work that God has done in my heart and in our family. And yet it was difficult in those days because we wanted a live baby, not one who died. I didn't really want to be doing a mission to help others. I really wanted my baby back. And now I say, you know, if God, if you could rewind the clock, most days I say, I would, Brennan and Brenna and Marama did their work on this earth, and I'm now carrying on their legacy by helping others. I wouldn't want the clock to rewind. I love the two children I have, and they came in an order because of the babies who died before them. Maybe they wouldn't have even been here. So, yep, the struggle's real. I'm so grateful that it didn't take too long to get to the blessed part.
Yeah. Just in a minute or so remaining, Cherokee, just maybe what's your hope and kind of your passion, and then just say a word about the website resources available.
Okay. My hope is that we actually have less babies who die. And so Star Legacy Foundation out of Minneapolis is an international organization. And in June, we're going to be holding a summit about stillbirth. And I hope that caregivers will be interested in coming and learn. And they will can see that on my website and Star Legacy Foundation's website. I wish that people would donate money towards research and towards such events as that. I'd like to see more cuddle cots in hospitals. And again, they can learn more about cuddle cots from my website or emailing me, where babies can be held in and cooled. And the message is your baby deserves to be seen and held in your room and not to go to the morgue afterwards. I wish that we would do more work with our families who miscarry and acknowledge those as real babies. And, you know, for those who have infertility or don't have any living children because of losses or infertility, that our hearts reach out to them and give them solace and love and talk about the loss of their dreams and help people to, you know, feel held and feel loved. And I wish that we would slow things down so that when the news is given, people would contact our baby loss family advisors and get help birth planning and feeling like they're not alone and have an advocate to be by their side during that time, whether it's in person or on the internet, you know, through email or phone calling. I do that a lot with people. And my goal is that every single person who has a baby die doesn't have that baby in their arms, or children of any age, that they will not feel alone, that they know that they are loved and that those babies matter and they will always be the parents of these children. And I do invite people to come to our babylostfamilyadvisor.org website or Babies Remembered and just look around. You're going to learn a lot. I would love more people who feel ready to help others to join our Baby Loss Advisors. I will be doing a certification class in Minneapolis again, and people can just email me and tell me that they're beginning to get ready or are ready. We need more of us givers to support those families in need. So So thank you, Neil, for all that you do here.
Yeah, check out babylossfamilyadvisors.org or babiesremembered.com, and you can find out more about the wonderful resources. And maybe it is your time to reach out and become a bereavement specialist, perhaps, in this area. Cherokee Isles with us today, who has written a number of books, including Empty Arms, Coping with Miscarriage, Stillbirth, and Infant Death. You can find out more at babiesremembered.com or babylossfamilyadvisors.org. Cherokee, great to visit with you once again. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Neil. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Connecting Faith, and we're going to continue our conversation as we talk about baby loss and waiting for a birth. We'll get to that in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned.
To everyone who's lost someone they love, long before it was their time, you feel like the days you had were not enough when you said goodbye. And to all of the people with burdens and pains, keeping you back from your life, you believe that there's nothing and there is no one who can make it right. And there is hope for
the pain of infant loss or any miscarriage, you know, or maybe your pain relates to infertility. And that is a conversation we're going to share a portion of here right now. Matt Appling is a pastor, teacher, and a writer. He and his wife, Sherry, couldn't get pregnant for a number of years. One minus sign after another cast them in a long season of trying, failing, waiting, and hoping, into the wilderness, where their faith grew tired before it got stronger. And Matt has written about it in a powerful book called Plus or Minus, Keeping Your Life, Faith, and Love Together Through Infertility. Matt, I'm interested in just maybe as you've been a pastor, you and your wife are believers, so talk a little bit about maybe some of the spiritual questions that, you know, this conversation started to bring up. And when you're going through the season, I mean, how did your outlook about God and faith change?
Sure. In the early days, I think the easy question is why us? Why is God doing this to us? What have we done wrong? What have we done to deserve this? And for a long time, our prayers were very centered on God, give us what we want, and God, why aren't you doing this? And how long are you going to make us wait? And these kinds of things. And we started to talk with friends, and we started to look at the scriptures more closely. And this is the thing that we don't usually get, I think, in a lot of our Christian communities, is that infertility, even though it's we don't talk about it, it's very intimately connected to the story of God's people. The story of Israel starts with Abraham and Sarah, who experienced decades of childlessness. And it's a great little picture of a couple who is so desperate for this that they go to extreme lengths to have a child, where Sarah brings in the maidservant Hagar. And, of course, it creates a lot of other difficulties. But it just goes to show that infertility has always been with humanity, and it's always been an unpleasant reality where people have sometimes done desperate things to try to solve that problem. But as our season went on, and we start looking at the scriptures, we realize that God doesn't punish people He doesn't punish his people with infertility. It's not a sign of a curse. It's not a sign that we've done something wrong or that our faith is weak. The people who have children and it came easily, it's not because their faith was somehow stronger or they were more righteous. But we did come to a place where we felt like God has chosen us for some reason for this season, and it might be a permanent season of life for some of us. It will be, and for some of us, it is just a few years, and for some people, maybe it's a very short season of waiting. But in the last year or two, we really came to a place where I feel like our faith matured, where we weren't blaming God, but we did give him his responsibilities. We made him responsible over our infertility. We knew that there was only so much that we could do. We could go in for treatment. We could spend X number of dollars. But it was still up to God whether we were going to have a child. There was no point at which we could usurp God's authority over life. And that might be kind of a misnomer if you haven't looked deeply into infertility treatments, and you might have an idea of what in vitro fertilization entails, and we certainly did. But there was no point at which we were kind of thumbing our noses at God and saying, well, we're doing this with or without you. We came to a place where we were able to accept God is either going to give us a baby or he's not. And we've done everything we can do, and we're okay with that. But God doesn't owe us a baby, even, you know, no matter how we pray or no matter how good we are. He wasn't beholden to give us what we wanted. So we stopped trying to manipulate him, and we just said, God, we're going to do this, and we'll trust you whatever the outcome is. So in all, we came to a much greater contentment with God, even if he didn't give us what we wanted.
Well, that's Matt Appling, who has written a book called Plus or Minus, Keeping Your Life, Faith, and Love Together Through Infertility. And he goes on to talk about how they came to a whole full new appreciation of the wonder, the miracle of birth, and that entire process. And hopefully you have experienced the joy of that and not the loss. But if you were in that spot, know that there's some encouragement available through Cherokee Isles, through her website, babiesremember.com, and encourage you to check out if infertility is one of the areas that you or someone that you know about is involved in. Listen for the conversation, the full conversation with Matt Appling, Appling. You can find it, search on our website, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And we want to take a minute right now to hear from Steve Douglas with some encouragement about, you know, life has a lot of transitions, but God is with us in the midst of each of them.
Do you have a game plan for your life? Have things not turned out exactly like you planned? Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and today on Making Your Life Count, our guest is former NFL cornerback Charles Emmanuel. He shares his own difficult transition.
The transitions may not be easy, and my transition wasn't easy at all. Football was all that I dreamt of doing. I think God takes us through experiences that are going to grow us, and we just hold on to our faith and understand that when one door closes, I truly believe that God opened up other doors. But if you're standing there looking at that one door that's closed far too long, you may miss that other door that just opened up to you. I think we just have to learn, once that one door is closed, look around you. There are other opportunities that God is trying to bless you with.
Even though our expectations don't always pan out, God does have a wonderful plan for our lives.
Well, talking today, really the conversation, Ted's really ended up being about expectations, isn't it? What
Certainly.
Do we expect?
Yeah, and no matter what happens, God is with you, right, yeah. Through the journey and the valleys and everything else.
And to find encouragement there. I hope that you can pass this interview, this conversation today, on to a friend, someone that you know that could really just benefit from hearing the encouraging words from Cherokee Isles or Matt Appling. You can find it on our show page, the Connecting Faith show page, at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. It's always a great place to go to get the rich resources from lots of the great interviews heard here on Faith Radio day by day. Tomorrow will be another one of those days. We'll have a rich conversation with Pastor Brad Hoffs. He's going to join us to talk about the growth and mental illness ministry in the church. Now, 1 in 4 Americans suffer some sort of mental illness. Brad is going to tell us more about it. You'll be encouraged as we learn more about hope tomorrow on Connecting Faith.